We're in Genesis chapter 30. And it is amazing, as we've been studying through the book of Proverbs, even though those Proverbs were written 3,000 years ago, give or take a few years, it's absolutely amazing how those things describe the people living right around us all day, every day. And it's amazing that as we look back at things in the Bible, that even though they were long ago, the human nature that they portray is so similar to what human nature is today. People really haven't changed that much. Oh, we've advanced with technology and things, but the human personalities, the human ways of thinking and human reasoning is still just like it always was. And so many times they make the same kinds of mistakes that these people in this family are making in this chapter tonight. As we look at Jacob, and he's already had four sons by Leah at this point. And remember, he was wound up with two wives, Leah and Rachel. He loved Rachel more, but Leah was the first one to bear him some children. And so that certainly was, and not just children, but male children. That was a big deal back then, even more so than it is today. Today, of course, a man wants to have a son to carry on the family name and things like that. And maybe someone who's in business wants a son to carry on the family business and things of that nature. But at this time, when they were doing a lot of work in the fields, they were doing a lot of hard physical labor, having male children was an advantage. Once those children got old enough to get out there and got strong backs and strong muscles to be able to do those things. Now, I know women do a lot of work, but the man thought, hey, I just need some farm hands to help me out. And so these four sons that Leah had born were a great help to Jacob, and I'm sure he began to favor her a little bit because of that. He still didn't love her like he loved Rachel, however, even though Rachel had no children. As we begin chapter 30, we want to notice something about the Bible that sets it apart from all of the other books that you can come across, whether they be religious books of one kind or another, or just secular books, whether they be historical books or fictional books. The Bible is different, and let's look at some of the things that make it a little different. As we look in Genesis 30, beginning in verse 1, it says, "When Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister, and said unto Jacob, Give me children, or else I die. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, Am I in God's place, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" Now let's think about this for just a moment. In our common experience with books, there are several different things that happen in books. Of course, in fiction books, it's a little different, but if we look at historical type books, a book that's supposed to be true, a biography, for example, or an autobiography, or just a book of history, it's interesting that what men generally do, and women too, when they author those kinds of books, they take a side in a particular issue. They try to explain why one side was right and the other side was wrong, or why this particular thing that this person did was really bad, or why this thing that this person did was justified under the circumstances. If I'm writing my autobiography, I'm going to leave out some of the more embarrassing stories in my life, and I'm going to embellish some of the stories that make me seem bigger and better than I really am. If somebody else writes a biography about me, if they like me, they may do similar to what I would do. They may point out my good things and excuse any faults that I might have. If they don't like me, then they may skip over the good things and point out all the bad things. You know, we have those books come out all the tell-all books. To tell all the bad things about a person. You see, in our human experience, one of the things that we notice is that it's impossible for another person to truly be objective in their dealings with someone's life story. They're not objective. They play favorites. They either like that person and so they paint them a certain way, or they dislike that person and so they paint them a certain way. And for all of the claims by the media or by a historian that, oh, well, I'm just telling the facts, I'm not biased in any way, they're biased. Now, they may try, they may make every effort to get that bias out of their writings. They may be honestly trying to be objective and trying not to take sides, but they're always going to take sides. They're always going to have a bias for or against a certain thing. As Christians, if we wrote stories about people who were engaged in all kinds of sin, we'd say, well, that was really bad. They shouldn't have done that. We might have said that here. It says, Rachel envied her sister. Might say, oh, and, you know, that's bad. You shouldn't envy other people. God didn't bother to tell us that at this point. Now, there are places where He condemns envy. But as He's telling the stories of these people's lives, He paints the good, He paints the bad, and He just shows us their whole life. He doesn't skip over the bad things they did. He doesn't spend extra time on good things they did, or vice versa. He doesn't do that. He just tells it like it is. That's one of the things that's so unique about the Bible. The Bible doesn't cut corners, and it doesn't try to justify wrong. Now we might say, well, you know, Rachel was right to be envious of her sister. You know, she had every right. I mean, you know, she was supposed to be Jacob's only wife, but her father tricked him, and so it was, you know, she had every right to be upset. But the Bible doesn't try to justify it like that. Didn't matter what the circumstances she found herself in, she envied her sister. That's just the fact. And Jacob got angry at her. You know, this wasn't just a happy little family all the time. There were problems. It's not surprising. When a man has two wives, I would suspect that there would always be problems of some kind or another popping up from time to time. But Jacob gets angry at her. Now, another thing that we see here in chapter 30 is the Bible shows us the fallacies of human reasoning. Just how flawed our thought processes are sometimes. And we see that with Rachel. Why is Rachel jealous of her sister? Why does she envy her sister? Well, her sister has given their husband four children, four sons. And so she's envious because she hasn't had any. So what's her solution to that? No, she didn't go see the fertility doctor. That's not it. Her solution is to give him another woman. Now, she's already envious of the fact that he has another woman. And so what's her solution? Well, here's my maid. Take her as your wife. And let her have children. Now, I think we tried that back with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, and it didn't work out too good that time either. And yet, Rachel's willing to try that again. This is the problem with human reasoning. We think we've got a way to do it. Instead of Rachel being patient, trusting in God that if the time was right, when the time was right, that she would conceive and have children, she took it into her own hands. And what she does doesn't help the situation. She still, after doing this, has given her husband no sons. And now he has another woman that he's sharing a tent with. As if two weren't enough, now he's got three. Human thought processes. There's no doubt that reasoning amongst ourselves, we have difficulty coming to the right conclusion many times as human beings. We just don't think straight. She did exactly the opposite of what would have been useful to try to help the situation. And we do that sometimes ourselves. So she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife. And Jacob went in to her, and Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. So now Bilhah has given him a son. Leah's given him four sons. Rachel's still giving him none. But look at what Rachel says. She says, God has judged me and has also heard my voice. Now when it says judged me there, that doesn't mean judged me like found me guilty, condemned me, judged me. The idea there is that he's vindicated me. He's come down on my side of the issue. Well, how? What was that? God didn't do this. You did this. God didn't bless you with a child. You still haven't had a child. This is someone else entirely. And yet, that was her thought process on it. God has judged me and heard my voice, and he has given me a son. Therefore, she called his name Dan. It's interesting that Rachel names Bilhah's children. Bilhah doesn't get to name them. Jacob doesn't get to name them, even though they're his children. They're not even Rachel's children, but she's naming them. But that's the way that this kind of situation worked out. So Bilhah conceived again and bare Jacob a second. So now we need to understand, obviously, there's time passing between these events. We don't know exactly how much time is passing between these children, but there is some time passing here. And after this son was born, Rachel said, with great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. Well, now, how did you prevail? You haven't done anything. You still have not accomplished anything. And yet, here's her view of things. And we look at things so strangely. And when you start to have this kind of an envious attitude, we talk about those people who cut off their nose to spite their face. And that's the point that Rachel had gotten to. She was so envious of her sister, she didn't care as long as somebody else gave her husband some sons besides her sister. That's not useful. That's not helpful. Of course, we also see the ability of God to work through these things, to work out for the good things that people do. We may do things that we shouldn't do. We may make mistakes. We may commit sin. But God can work through that, despite those things that we do, the ways that we mess things up. He can work through that anyway. He's able to overcome the human failings and human sins in order to accomplish His purpose. Now this second one, she called his name Naphtali. Well, when Leah saw that she wasn't giving birth to any more children. She'd already had four, and she thought that was enough. Well, she doesn't want her sister's handmaid to catch up with her, so what does she do? Well, she gives Jacob a fourth wife. It amazes me that man lived as long as he did with four wives. I can't believe one of them didn't get mad at him and kill him at some point. That's amazing. But she gives him Zilpah, and Zilpah has a son. And Leah got to name that one, called him a troop cometh, she said, so she called his name Gad. She's expecting, this is just the first of many children, and that's why she said a troop comes. She said, there's going to be a bunch more children now. Well, then Zilpah had a second one, and Leah said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed, and she called his name Asher. It's an amazing thing as they continue with all of these things going on. Now, if you remember back to Reuben, he was way back when. He was the firstborn, Leah's firstborn son. He went out into the field and he got some mandrakes. Now, mandrakes were considered an aphrodisiac. They were considered to be something that was going to make the person desirable and also increase fertility and those kinds of things. As far as we know, there's no indication that these things actually work. You know, but that was like a lot of things. And there's nothing, the Bible doesn't condone or say that these have any effect of any kind. It simply states the fact that her son went and got these mandrakes. And when she came in with them, Rachel said, give me some of these mandrakes. Remember earlier we saw that Rachel was envious of Leah. It's interesting, isn't it? So many times one person is envious of another person, and that other person is envious of them as well. You know, the story, Mark Twain's story about the prince and the pauper, and I think they've redone that about 100 different ways probably, where the one who's wealthy and has everything just wants to be able to get out and be a normal person, and then of course the poor person just dreams of what it'd be like to be, and they're both envious of each other. And that's the way it is here. We saw already that Rachel was envious of Leah, but now we see Leah on the other side. Leah says, "Is it a small matter that you have taken my husband?" I'm sure that Leah knew the arrangement that her father had made with Jacob, that he was supposed to work 7 years to get Rachel. And she knew that her father gave Jacob her instead of her sister. And she knew that Jacob was not pleased with that. And she knew that Jacob made the arrangements to get Rachel anyway. He wasn't satisfied with her and wanted the other sister. Can you imagine the hostility between these two sisters? It's amazing they didn't kill each other. But they were hostile toward each other. They had these angry feelings and these envious things. "Is it small matter that you have taken my husband? And would you take my mandrakes as well? My son's mandrakes as well?" And Rachel said, "I'll tell you what we'll do. If you'll give me some of the mandrakes, you can have our husband tonight." They start bargaining. So they're making deals. They're cutting deals, you know. They're going to start buying their husband's favors. They're just going to... And so when he comes in from the field, Leah goes out to meet him. And she says, "You've got to come in to me, for I've hired you tonight." Wow. Isn't that a wonderful thing? He's gone from being the head of the household, the man of the house, the husband, to now he's a hired prostitute in essence. They're just trading him back and forth. Strange situations that people get themselves into when they do things different than the way God wants it done. They get themselves into all kinds of problems. Well, it says that God listened to Leah. Leah wanted to have more children, and so God listened to Leah, and she conceived again and gave him his fifth son. This one was Issachar. And then Leah conceived again and bare him his sixth son. Not his sixth, but her sixth. Of course, he's already got four others by Bilhah and Zilpah by this point. But her sixth, did you realize that half of the 12 tribes of Israel were Leah's children? Six of them, six of those sons were Leah's. And so, the sixth son, and she named that one Zebulun. And then after that, she had a daughter as well. As far as we know, that's the only daughter that he had. 12 sons, one daughter. But he has, her name is Dinah. And God remembered Rachel, finally. So now, Jacob's got 10 children. Well, 11 if you're counting Dinah, the daughter. So he's had 6 by Leah, he's had 2 by Zilpah, 2 by Bilhah, and the 7th, the daughter, by Dinah, by Leah as well. But now, God remembers Rachel. If Rachel had been patient, God would have given her what she needed at some point. But aren't we always just too impatient? We just can't wait on the Lord. We just can't wait for Him to do things in His own time. We've got to rush it and make it happen. I remember my dad telling a story about one place he was when he was younger. And one of the women there, she said, "God's going to give me a new house." He said, "Really?" She said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "I'm going today to buy the curtains." And he said, "You're going to buy curtains for your new house? When are you getting the house?" She said, "Well, I'm not sure yet, but I know God's going to give it to me because I asked Him for one." So she was going to go ahead and buy the curtains, you know, for a house that she didn't have yet. We like to rush God. As far as I know, she never actually got that house. God never promised that He was going to give us a new house if we asked Him for one. But sometimes we have that mistaken idea that we can put God in our time frame and make Him do what we want Him to do when we want Him to do it. And we forget. We don't tell Him what to do. He tells us what to do. He works in His time. He does what He wants to do when He wants to do it. And we can't change that. Oh, we can ask Him. We can pray to Him for favors, for blessing, and various different things. And if it's within His will, He'll grant those things to us. But how arrogant do we think we are that we're going to tell the God of the universe what to do and when to do it and how to do it and those kinds of things? Oh, we can't do that. Rachel is finally remembered. God listened to her and He opened her womb and she gave birth to a son. She said, God has taken away my reproach, and she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. But not yet. Not his time. He hadn't added to her that other son at this point. Then down in verse 25, we see Jacob having some dealings with Laban again. Remember, Jacob was always the trickster before. He was always the one you couldn't trust with his dealings with Esau. But now the shoe's on the other foot. And he's having to get what's coming to him. And he's dealing with Laban, who is the one tricking him now. First with the wives, and now then as well, Jacob comes to him and says, send me away so I can go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I've done to you. And Laban said, if I found favor in your eyes, stay with me a little while. I've learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. You know, even people who may not necessarily be followers of the Lord. They may not believe in the Lord, but they recognize the blessings that the Lord bestows on His children sometimes. And Laban recognized that he was benefiting. We talked about that in our Proverbs class this morning, that the just not only are blessed themselves, but they bring blessings on others. And by Jacob being God's chosen, he's bringing blessings on Laban. Laban's flocks are increasing. And so he says, I had just a little when you came to me, and now it's increased in magnitude. The Lord's blessed you, and Jacob is telling him now, okay, well, here's what I want for my wages. He says, you know that you have been blessed, because Laban had said that. So Jacob said, you're right. You didn't have that much when I came, but now you've got a lot. You've built up a lot. And so he says to Jacob, Laban does, in verse 31, what shall I give you? What wages do you want? What payment are you going to receive for it? And Jacob said, don't give me anything, but do this, and I'll keep your flock a while longer. He says, I'm going to pass through your flock today, and I'm going to remove any that are speckled or spotted. So any of the ones that aren't just a pure, one solid color. Anything that's got a speckle or a stripe or any spots or anything like that, he's going to remove them, and all the brown cattle from among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats. And then those will be my hire. He said, no, that's going to be my pay. Is we'll take those out, and then when I watch your flock, then any that are spotted or speckled or any brown cows of the cattle of the sheep, any of the brown sheep, that'll be what I get paid. And so he says, you'll know then, you'll know whether I'm stealing anything from you or not, because mine are going to look different than yours. So you'll be able to tell mine from yours. Sounded like a great plan. So Laban agreed that it would be just like that. And so they went through that day and they took out all of the ones that fit that description. And then Jacob went out 3 days away and he took the rest of Laban's flock, the ones that were all solid one color, no speckles, no spots, no know anything of that nature. And he took them out, and then his pay was going to be any of those that gave offspring that were either spotted or speckled or any of those unusual things. Now here's another interesting case. The Bible, again, we talk about how it talks about the history of a people, and it gives the details of some of those things. Not all the detail, it's not a history book, but it does tell us some things about those people. And one of the things that it tells us here, sometimes it tells us about their false gods and the way they worship their false gods. Sometimes it tells us about their different superstitions. We talked about the mandrakes earlier. Well, here's another one. Notice what Jacob does. So Jacob took some rods of a green poplar and of the hazel and chestnut tree, and he piled white stakes in them and made the white appear which was inside them. So he took these branches, these little sticks, and he cut them so that, you know, the brown on the outside, but he'd cut them so the white wood on the inside would show. So it'd be a, kind of striped looking. And then he took those, and he put those up in front of the watering troughs where the sheep and other cattle, the goats and things would come to get a drink. And so what he did was when the stronger ones were mating, he would put those streaks up and so that they would give birth to striped and spotted and different things. And then when the weaker, sicklier ones of the flock were coming to mate, he'd take them down and he wouldn't put them up there for them, and so they'd give birth to the solid colored ones. Now, understand that God is blessing Jacob, and Jacob is having good things happen to him because of God. Putting striped wood up in front of some cows is not going to change what they give birth to. Not according to the laws of genetics. And they're going to give birth to what's in their genes. That's what's going to happen. And again, God's not saying that this worked. He's simply reporting this is what Jacob did. But what happened might have made Jacob believe that what he was doing was having some effect, because what happened was that the stronger did give birth to more of the speckled and spotted and ring-straked, as the King James calls it, or had stripes on it or whatever. And the stronger, so Jacob's flock increased and kept getting bigger and bigger, and Laban's little flock kept getting weaker and sicklier and less of them left. Now, Jacob wasn't doing anything deceitful. They had made the arrangement that was the way it was going to work. That was going to be the payment. But what Laban didn't realize was just how much God was blessing Jacob in these circumstances. So, he increased in his wealth. He had much cattle. He had maidservants and men servants and camels and donkeys, and he was getting rich. Now, remember, when he goes back home, he's going to also get the birthright, which means he's going to get two-thirds of Isaac's wealth. Well, he's becoming wealthy in his own right here. He's got his own caravan of folks out there in the wilderness feeding the sheep and the goats and the cattle, and he's got his own group here. And yet, he's still got that other that he can expect as well. But all of those physical things don't compare to the spiritual blessing that Jacob receives from God being his God. Sometimes we measure a person's success in this life by their wealth. We look at their bank account. We look at their net worth in dollars and cents, and we decide based on that whether someone's successful or not. But that's not what determines success, not true success. What determines true success is whether we're serving and worshiping God, whether we're following God or not. That's where true success lies. Jesus was the most successful man that ever lived on this planet. And yet at the time of his death, the only thing that he had were the clothes on his back. and they were taken away, and some people gambled for them at the foot of the cross as he was being killed. Right? And yet, from the perspective of being obedient to God, he was the most successful one that ever lived. Many of the apostles that we admire, well, they were successful. They did what God wanted them to do, and yet look at the suffering, the persecution, the deaths that they died, violent deaths in many cases. We say, well, you know, if they'd have just compromised a little, they could have been really successful. You know, God never compromises. And He calls on us to never compromise. That's true success. Sticking with God, staying on His side no matter what. No matter what the cost may be in this world, in this life, knowing that ultimately He will bless us in ways that can't be put down in dollars and cents. Tonight, if you need to respond to the invitation, perhaps you've been putting your trust too much in superstitions like the mandrakes or the striped wood. I know we say, well, those are silly things, but you know, sometimes we can be just as superstitious. Maybe you've been putting your trust in money. Maybe you've been putting your trust in government. Maybe you've been putting your trust in business. There's no telling what you may have been putting your trust in. Maybe family members. You need to reaffirm that your trust, your faith is in God. If you're not a Christian tonight, you can become one. If you are one, but you haven't been living up to God's standards, you've compromised with the world to try to get ahead according to their standards, don't let another day go by in that state. Don't compromise with the world. Stick with God, and you'll always win. You'll always be a success as long as you're on His side. If you have a need to respond, please do so as we stand and as we sing.